Also come to WADA.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Third reading of the bill.
An act establishing expanded gaming in the Commonwealth.
Question comes on passing the bill to be engrossed.
It's the third reading of the bill, and by now it seems an age-old conversation, the debate over expanded casino gambling in Massachusetts.
Now, a bill legalizing casino gambling did make it all the way to Governor Deval Patrick's desk last year, but he declined to sign it due to his opposition to allowing slot machines at racetracks, a crucial issue for Massachusetts House Speaker Robert DeLeo.
But Beacon Hill leaders seem to have ironed out those differences and worked out a deal. Today, the gavel came down in the House, and once again, the public debate over casino gambling was on.
WBUR Steve Brown joins us now from the State House. Hi there, Steve.
Hello, Meghna.
So, Steve, what can you tell us about what's in this latest version of a legalized gambling bill?
Well, it calls for three full-fledged casinos, one each in the three regions around the state, and one slot parlor. Now, that slot parlor could go anywhere in Massachusetts. All of those would be competitively bid. The casinos, they'd have a minimum $85 million license fee each that would be payable to the state. The slot parlor minimum license fee would be $25 million. Now, the casinos, which would all have a hotel attached to them, would pay 25% of their gambling revenues back to the state. The slot parlor would have to pay back 40% of their handle.
So given that it seems like this irons out the last of those differences, particularly between Governor Patrick and Speaker DeLeo, chances that the bill will pass this year?
Almost inevitable. As we said, a similar bill passed last year, died when the governor opposed to the creation of the slot parlors. As you recall, last year's bill, it called for four slot parlors at the four racetracks in the state. Several vocal opponents of the casinos are no longer in the legislature, so that means that there's a better chance of the bill passing this year. And while still a small caucus, the Republicans doubled their ranks in the last election from 16 to 32, and most of them back casinos.
So does that make today's debate merely perfunctory, or were there actually views of opposition brought to the House floor?
Well, I guess it is sort of a formal kind of thing. The first thing that happened today is Representative Joe Wagner of Chicopee. He's the Speaker's point man on this bill. Spoke for about a half an hour talking about the merits of the bill. He said that the time for the passage is now, calling it comprehensive, balanced, fair bill. Said it was an improvement over the bill passed last year. Then after he finished speaking, a couple of the opponents got up to speak as well, including Ruth Balzer of Newton. She called this bill a race to the bottom and a drain on the economy. They went back and forth a little bit. Now they're starting to go through the amendments.
Do you have last question, Steve? Do you have a sense as to when Beacon Hill might actually vote on it, and also what Governor Patrick has said regarding whether or not he would sign it?
Sure. My gut feeling is they will pass it tonight, but they do have tomorrow open that they could come back. They have 154 amendments to go through. They're kind of rattling through them right now. They've disposed of several of them. I lost count. And the governor, because he was involved with the crafting of the bill over the summer, he is for it. And pending any last-minute big changes, which I don't see coming, he'll be for this bill.
Well, that's WBUR Steve Brown at the State House. Thanks so much, Steve.
Thanks, Meghna.
So, as you heard, Steve Brown say casino gambling is as close to a fait accompli as it's ever been in Massachusetts. Now, those casinos could certainly bring added revenue to the state, but what else might they bring? Critics say the total cost of casinos include the cost of addiction, a cost of the rise in crime, divorce, and foreclosure. So, tallying the true and total cost of casino gambling, that is today's talker. Now, listeners, what do you think? Is the Commonwealth of Massachusetts adequately prepared to treat whatever problems of addicted gambling that might come with casinos? Are the new jobs and new sources of revenue, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars worth the psychological and financial toll they could have on residents and communities? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, in just a moment, we'll be hearing from a very strong proponent of casino gambling. But first, I'd like to introduce into the conversation Sam Skolnick. He is the author of High Stakes, The Rising Cost of America's Gambling Addiction. He has written for The Washington Post, The Legal Times, The Seattle Post-Intelligencer, and The Las Vegas Sun. Sam Skolnick, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Sam, I'd like to actually start with a passage from your book, if I could. It's kind of how you open the book, and you describe a particular gambler's journey, and here's how you describe this person's story. You write, "I've left bills unpaid, sometimes for weeks, months, or years. I've had credit cards canceled and had creditors harass me with phone calls at all hours, sometimes leaving me screaming at the walls. I've borrowed incessantly both to raise poker funds and to pay bills. Several times when the losses mounted and funds were especially tight, I've survived for days on end on boxes of store brand mac and cheese, ramen noodles, saltines, and seltzer water." So Sam Skolnick, who is this gambler who you're describing?
That would be me, Meghna. This was kind of shocking to me. I opened the book with a portion of my own story, in part to tell readers that I come at this mostly, at this whole book and this story, mostly as a newspaper, longtime newspaper reporter, but that I also come at this as someone who's been immersed in gambling over the last decade or so. What happened was in Seattle in the year 2000, I moved to Seattle to start work at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and didn't know many folks out there, and also was sort of seduced by the all of the poker rooms and large indie casinos that were just outside the city limits, and I started playing far too much. This was kind of shocking to me because I've never suffered any other sort of addictive behaviors with any other substance or behavior. And so this is something I'd never gone through, but it was pretty significant. And what I was learning at the same time as I was developing these issues, I was watching other folks at these casinos and card rooms that I was going frequenting. As a journalist, you know, you're trained to observe, and I said, well, and I also noted previous stories about how legalized gambling in that state alone, in Washington State, had exploded in the decade before I got there, and I started to realize there was a big story there. And after I wrote that series of stories about the consequences of the legalized gambling boom in Washington State, it dawned on me this was happening, you know, Meghna and Anthony, all over the country. And in different communities, we're writing these newspaper stories, but I thought, gosh, there's a book here to be done. And that's what leads me to you today.
Well, let me ask you, as you were writing about the social cost of expanded gambling in Washington State, were you gambling at that time? Were you playing poker?
I was. And in fact, I still am. And the way I leave sort of the beginning part of the introduction in the book, that just so the readers know, it's only 2% of the book is about my story, but it's right at the beginning and one other small portion. But to end sort of my little anecdote, I am still out there gambling. I did recognize this was a problem. I did try Gamblers Anonymous. They're a tremendous, vitally necessary organization, increasingly necessary. I stayed with them. I was on the wagon, so to speak, for a few months back when I was in Seattle, but I fell off and I've been out there gambling. I'm gambling less now because I've subsequently moved from there to Vegas, but from Vegas I moved to Washington, D.C., where there are far fewer opportunities to gamble. And so I'm not gambling quite as much these days, but I'm certainly not in recovery, which is where a lot of people who write these types of gambling addiction memoirs or books about it at all come at it from the vantage point of having been in recovery for several years. That's not my case.
Interesting. So you're in D.C. now and not having the proximity to the opportunity to be in a casino seems to have affected you. I want to talk about that in a minute because it's one of the issues that critics of casino gambling in Massachusetts in particular bring up. But, I mean, the reason why I wanted to start with your story is that, you've been through it, and the numbers show that some, you know, 2-5% of Americans have gambling problems at any one particular time in their lives. Now, in your research of how this problem, you know, if it has arisen or gotten worse across the United States, is that number accurate?
I believe the number is largely accurate. One of the problems is that the research, there's been no comprehensive national study, what's called a prevalence study, in more than a decade. And so, and during this time, legalized gambling revenues have doubled, more than doubled. During that time frame alone, in the last 25 years, they've grown by 9 times. revenues are the legalized gambling industries, including commercial casinos, Indian casinos, and state lotteries primarily, earn about $100 billion in profits every year off of gamblers. And this is happening in more and more states. For example, in 2009 and 2010 alone, just in that two-year period, no fewer than three quarters of the states, including Massachusetts, of course, debated whether or not to expand their legalized gambling options.
Well, Sam Skolnick, we want to talk about sort of the overall cost and benefits of casino gambling, and there are very specific numbers or projected numbers here in Massachusetts, and let me run through some of them with you, because there have been studies that show that Massachusetts residents currently spend some $800 million a year on casino gambling in Connecticut and Rhode Island. Now, proponents of casino gambling say that that's $800 million a year that's leaving the state of Massachusetts. And that if we did indeed expand casino gambling here in the Commonwealth, we could create some 16,000 jobs, some 10,000 more construction jobs. And these could be potentially jobs that pay, some $36,000 to $45,000 a year. So, maybe not great, but not bad pay either. So that's one side of the cost-benefit analysis. What's your other side of what the true cost of casinos is?
Sure. Well, first, let me address the numbers that that you just put out there very briefly, and especially jobs. I in nowhere in my book do I attack or say that or sort of minimize the positive impact of someone who didn't have a job, especially in this horrible economy, finding a job, whether it's in construction, help building a casino, or whether it's some sort of gambling industry type job once a gambling outlet opens. And so I do recognize the importance of that. In terms of the overall cost versus benefit analysis, though, I'm not an economist, I'm a journalist. But that said, I read a number of books on the topic and many more studies. The conclusion that I've reached is that the costs ultimately outweigh the benefits. And here's how this comes about. When gambling comes into a new jurisdiction, it's not just existing gamblers who used to gamble in other places. For example, I know some proponents in your state are saying, well, it's only those who go down to Foxwoods or Mohican Sun down there in Connecticut and others out of state. They're just going to come home and spend the money here and we'll get their taxes. That will partially be the case. But the other part of that is that new gamblers will be created. This is inevitable. Studies have shown repeatedly that when these types of local casinos come to exist where they didn't exist before, whether or not they're commercial or Indian makes no difference, that new gamblers are created. They're created out of this convenience factor. They're located near their homes or on their way to work or near their relatives or friends' houses, and they are drawn in. They're tempted. And so these are folks who start gambling regularly that had not been gambling regularly before. What happens here is that, for sure, the significant majority do not develop issues. And I'm not one of these, I'm certainly not hysterical saying, 40, 50% of people develop problem issues with this. But there is always a small subset of folks, and you listed sort of the most generally accepted numbers, anywhere from 2 to 5%, including both problem and the more serious pathological gamblers, who develop strong addiction issues when they start gambling regularly. Mm-hmm. Now, here's where it impacts everybody, if I have just a couple more seconds, which is the social costs. And these are actually, frankly, they're called social costs, but they're social and economic costs. And Meghna, you addressed this in your intro. They range from everything from gambling-related crimes that we all pay for, including burglaries and domestic-type crimes, embezzlement and the rest, all the way to financial issues that people develop, such as increased bankruptcies or indebtedness or home foreclosures, all the way in the most serious and sad cases to suicides. There is a strong link between pathological gambling, which is, again, the most serious form of compulsive, what people know as compulsive gambling, and suicides. These studies have been done repeatedly in the independent studies, especially those that have not been tainted in any way by a funding source from a gambling industry funding source, have shown repeatedly that there is a high correlation here. So these are, again, costs that the whole community pays for.
Well, I'm speaking with Sam Skolnick. He is author of High Stakes, The Rising Cost of America's Gambling Addiction. Listeners, you can join us with your thoughts on casino gambling, which seems to be coming to Massachusetts, or it's closer than it's ever been before. You can give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. Sam, if you stand by for just a moment, I'd like to introduce another person into the conversation.
Thank you so much.
Sure. His name is Jay Ash. He is the city manager for Chelsea and co-founder of the Massachusetts Coalition for Jobs and Growth. Jay Ash, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So you've heard what Sam Skolnick has to say about the sort of maybe the more difficult to quantify costs overall of casino gambling in Massachusetts. Well, what's your response to that, that ultimately the costs outweigh the benefits?
You know, if this was 1970, I'd be agreeing with Sam, but since then, we've had an explosion of gaming, not only here in Massachusetts, but throughout the country. There was a time when there were only two states that you could legally gamble, and one in New Jersey, one in Las Vegas, and there was no such thing as a lottery. You know, you fast forward 40 years from now, you've got 38 states that are involved in gaming one way or another. You have an explosion of lotteries, including in Massachusetts, one of, if not the most successful in the country. There are 7,500 lottery outlets in Massachusetts. There are 45 in tiny Chelsea, 1.8 square miles. There are 45 places where you can go down to your corner store, to the local bar, and wager whatever you want to wager. So with that explosion, with the buildup of the casino industry around us, with casinos on the Rhode Island border and the Connecticut border targeting Massachusetts dollars, it's no longer about, is there a compulsive part to gambling. The answer now is how do you best manage that? And can you forever stay away from those things that people say cause it? Or can you look at the cases of the other 38 states and build off of the best practices that those 38 states have had to try to come up with ways of fighting the addiction on the local level? I would just say that we face the social consequences today. We just don't get the revenues to help deal with those social consequences here. And that's what the supporters of expanded gambling in Massachusetts hope to be able to do.
Well, Jay Ash, let me ask you about an issue that Sam Skolnick raised, and that is about increasing the number of addicted gamblers or the number of foreclosures or divorces or this whole sort of swath of additional problems that may come with casino gambling by bringing casinos just that much closer to people. I mean, I've heard critics of casinos in years past say, well, right now, yes, $800 million of Massachusetts money may be spent in Connecticut and Rhode Island, but Connecticut and Rhode Island don't have to deal with the social costs of gambling because those people come back to Massachusetts. And as you just said, we're dealing with the problem already. Well, what do you say from the point of view that we may be just growing that much more of a problem by bringing casinos into, you know, folks' backyard?
You know, there are people playing bingo. There's 60,000 people a week who play bingo. There's those 7,500 lottery outlets I've talked about with $4 billion worth of sales annually. There's individual card games. Sam, if you're on Boston tonight, you're welcome to my card game. We play once or twice a week.
Thank you.
You know, there are friends of mine who bet on horses, not at tracks. They sit at home. They watch the horse races on television and they legally bet. There's internet gambling all around us. The fact of the matter is that we are not starting from a point where there is no type of gambling whatsoever and new social consequences are going to be introduced to us. We are starting from a place that's a midpoint, where for the last 30 years or so, the proliferation of gambling has resulted in all these social consequences. We don't do enough in Massachusetts right now. Every advocate for expanded gaming in Massachusetts will tell you we don't do enough. By the adoption of this bill and the money that will flow to the prevention side of things, we hope to be able to do more and to address those issues.
Well, you know, a couple years ago when I was covering the then round of debates on Beacon Hill, there was a day where there was really emotional debate being given to the economic development community as they were writing the bill. And that same day, the budget came out, and the Massachusetts Council on Compulsive Gambling found that its budget was cut by 50% that year. And then, you know, on the other hand, proponents of gambling say, well, you know, there will be mitigation efforts in the bill, and, you know, millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars could actually go back into helping to treat compulsive gamblers in Massachusetts. And perhaps in part because of that reason, the Massachusetts Council on Compulsive Gambling has thrown its support behind this latest version of the bill. Now, Sam Skolnick, here's my question for you. There's some mitigation efforts built into the Massachusetts version of the bill. And given your experience as a gambler and what you've seen across the country, I just want to ask you whether you feel like they may or may not be effective. And they include, you know, an exclusion list to prevent gambling addicts from entering casinos here in Massachusetts, a posted list of payback statistics on slot machines to see what your chances actually are, on-site space for compulsive gambling counseling, maybe at casinos, and substance abuse and mental health counseling. You know, are these things, based on the studies that you've read and places you've been before, do you find them to be effective in controlling the social costs?
Yeah, I'd say that they're not a bad start, but it's an evolving science. Regarding payback statistics, I don't think there's much science out there to say that that's effective in any way. But that said, self-exclusion lists and third-party exclusion lists, I think Massachusetts might be the first in that score to try to institute that. I do think that they can be effective in some ways. More importantly, in what Jay alluded to, were some of the funding that may go stemming from this bill toward the Massachusetts Council and may perhaps even state programs. I'm not sure the exact specifics, but funding for problem gambling to raise public awareness about it and to perhaps even subsidize treatment for those who develop problems. But here's my issue with that. This is what I conclude is public officials, ultimately, they're saying, well, sure, we'll do this. We'll set aside these funds. But by doing so, they're basically recognizing that they're helping to create a new subclass of addicts into their own community. And I disagree with Jay by saying that when he says that the majority of folks are that the problems already exist and that they wouldn't worsen in any way by this advent of legalized gambling in the state, I can guarantee you that they would.
Well, Sam, let me just jump in here because sure. When you say public officials, Jay Ash is one of them. He's city manager for Chelsea. So let me get your response from that. He's saying that you're creating a new class, a new generation of gambling addicts, pretty much to help fill the state's coffers.
Yeah, I just don't agree with that. I think that the people that are already affected by and large are here. I'm not going to pretend that there isn't a small group of people that aren't affected that will be affected, but by and large, those people are here. And we're talking about a percentage that's lower than the percentage of people who are addicted to alcohol or tobacco or even to bad foods. You know, we're not forcing McDonald's to go out of the Commonwealth. We're not telling restaurants and bars that they can't open because they serve alcohol. At some point, individuals need to be able to make decisions for themselves, and we as a government have a responsibility to support them if something goes wrong. I'm very proud that the work that we've all done to help create this has resulted in the legislature putting together a bill that goes far beyond any other state in terms of what we do for compulsive gambling. And it won't stop there. You know, there are other things that we've been talking about, including the ability of family members to contact the state and through the state to casinos to put their family members on exclusion lists. So there's a lot more that we can do. In the meantime, we have to recognize that it's happening all around us, and it would be silly of us not to try to keep those jobs, keep those revenues. And I'll just make one point about the jobs. You know, there's a social consequence to high unemployment. You know, union halls are seeing 30% and 40% unemployment. The middle class is largely disappearing here. A $45,000 job is a job that I can guarantee you, you'll have people lined up around the corner, $45,000 with benefits to apply for. So there's a large segment of the population that is looking forward to this because they're looking forward to the jobs that can provide and the stability that it can provide for them and their households.
Well, Jay Ash and Sam Skolnick, if you just stand by for just a minute, I'm running fast out of time here, but I do want to get the voice of at least some of our listeners in here. Tyler York tweeted at our Radio Boston account that benefits of Massachusetts casinos are too small in relation to costs. It also hurts organizations and cultural tourism, too. Let's get one call in here at least. Luke is calling from Fitzwilliam, New Hampshire. Luke, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, how are you? I just wanted to bring up the point that building casinos, that's a zero-sum game. All you're doing is taking money out of one person's pocket and putting it into somebody else's. for $40,000 a year, why don't you build a factory and we can build television sets? I just don't even understand why you would think that gambling is going to produce any kind of lasting surplus value because the house always wins.
Luke, thank you so much for your call. Just because I'm running out of time and I want to actually turn the point back to Jay Ash and Sam Skolnick. I mean, Jay, one of the points that Sam Skolnick tries to make in his book is that the biggest addict of gambling is the state itself.
I can understand why somebody would say that, but that isn't the case here in Massachusetts. We have never proposed that this is going to be a silver bullet that's going to solve all of our problems. Instead, what we're saying is that this is going to be the diversification of our economy that ultimately is going to make sure that we don't fall backwards if the economy gets worse. We have a huge tourism industry, a huge hospitality industry here. We have more than 20 million people a year who come and visit Massachusetts. Their potential patrons of our gaming establishments. It'll make Massachusetts a stronger place for tourism dollar and keep the jobs here.
Sam Skolnick, my last question to you. Jay Ash said earlier, and he said it a couple times, that basically everybody else is doing it. You have more than 35 states who've legalized casino gambling, and the money is being drawn out to those other states. So for those that are remaining, it seems to be a very, especially in this economy, a really, really hard thing to refuse to do.
Yeah, well, I would say that I revert back to another argument, which is that legalized gambling changes the character of communities. This has been shown time and again. When gambling comes in, there's not just increased addiction and social costs, but there are increases in other businesses that feed off of gambling, like payday loan stores and pawn shops. These are things that I'm not sure ultimately there's lots of after effect issues that voters in states that have legalized gambling, they look back on it several years later and they're unhappy that they did so.
Well, that's Sam Skolnick. He is author of High Stakes, The Rising Cost of America's Gambling Addiction. Sam Skolnick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And Jay Ash, city manager for Chelsea and co-founder of the Massachusetts Coalition for Jobs and Growth. Thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Connecticut's had gaming for 18 years. It's still a wonderful place to live.
Listeners, you can comment on that or anything you hear at radioboston.org. Up next, a debut novel with its own soundtrack. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back.